In my opinion, I feel like, I've always heard everybody talking about grow, 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 more butts on the seats and all that, which, hey man, we got to keep plugging away with that. That part's awesome. I just always look at it like, we're only going to get so big, and that's totally fine by me. It's like, I mean, I like that we're a cool core audience, and it's like, if we can continue to like introduce like, that next generation and keep them like in here, that's cool. What I'd like to see happen is, I mean, I'd like to see us like make sure that like we have more Phoenix handlebars out there that are like owned by, family or, like a Rocky Mountain ATV where it's, employee owned. And just, I don't want to see VC money or any of these places that are coming in and what I feel like is still in our.
Welcome, power sports enthusiasts and dealership managers, to another exciting episode of the Dealership Fix It podcast. I am your host. My name is Jacob Berry, and today we have a special guest. This is Jason Giraud, and he's here to provide us with invaluable insights into the ever-evolving world of the power sports and motorcycle industry job market. He's with Motorcycle Industry Jobs, or MIJ. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome, man. How are you?
Good, man. Good. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate you coming on. I'm super excited to talk to you out there in the industry. We're always looking for good talent. I think that you provide an awesome service for not only dealerships, but also anybody that's really in our industry of power sports, motorcycle, marine, for, distributors, for OEMs even. So I really appreciate you coming on. Just wanted to ask you a couple questions, but before we kind of go down into what the MIJ is and how it works and how dealers can really take advantage of it, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of go through your history of the industry there?
Absolutely, man. And thanks for having me on. It's like I said, I've told you this before. I think what you're doing is awesome. It's breeding in more excitement into the dealership channel and letting MIJ be a part of that is something that's really, really cool to us because we love this industry. I mean, we're, it's obviously, it's the joke is like nobody's getting rich in it, and yeah, we're not vacationing in Barbados based off of like job posting. So it means a lot that you let us like be icon here. And I say us, it's like, say I'm the one here, but Alex Balon, the guy that started it, he bleeds for this industry. And so it's, and we got another guy, Ryan Schaffer, that's now on board. So we're a crew. And so even though I'm the one representing, I appreciate that you let me be the voice of MIJ today. So
appreciate that. Thank you. Thank
you. Yeah, my background is, I mean, like so many of us, I started off as just an enthusiast kid in little small town Indiana, and started working in a really cool accessory shop there on the west side of Indianapolis. And it was just one of those where I got in on the ground floor of something super cool there. And obviously I could talk about that one for hours, but I was lucky enough to work in dealerships and cut my teeth, which is the one thing, like say on the MIJ side, when people ask me, hey Jay, how do I get in the motorcycle industry? I'm like, get a job at a shop. Like that's the place to learn. Like, cause that's from going from being the enthusiast kid to now being the other guy on the side of the counter, hoping to make that magic happen for somebody else walking through. So, and it's like, man, without bragging, it's like my life is sort of a storybook of exactly what I tried to give people the playbook of MIJ. Work in a dealership. I made my connections when the Indianapolis trade show, it came to my backyard. So I was super lucky in that regards, right? Because all the industry would show up once a year. And I made some connections there. And those connections later on led me to take a real leap of faith and load up everything I owned in a little S15 truck and drive to Northern California. And I got a dream opportunity working for Fox Racing. So to walk through the doors of Morgan Hill Fox Racing building was like a pinch me moment, And then I spent the next over a decade there doing everything from inside sales. I became a product developer, which was also, I mean, that's a whole nother podcast worth of information there that I got to learn. And I'd moved through some, I moved through a couple of other companies like Hammerhead Designs, and moved down to SoCal, was the brand manager for MSR Hard Parts. And again, like it was all these like little pinch me moments that I just couldn't believe that I was getting kind of so lucky. But I mean, I worked hard and put myself in those positions. And then later on, I ended up like getting connected with Alex Balon, who owns MIJ. And, it's like, I've been there for 5 years and didn't realize sometimes that knowledge that you've got and what you're able to kind of offer to, like, whether, all the path that I take, whether it be dealers or people going, hey, how do I get in the industry, or somebody that's already in industry looking for another opportunity, or maybe falling on hard times and knocking on my door. Because while I'm not a recruiter, I kind of help answer a lot of those kind of questions for people, and sort of found myself as a little bit of a life coach in the process, because I feel like I've talked some people off the ledge, and sometimes because I've been there myself, and that made it cool. So.
Yeah, we can certainly see it. I follow you on LinkedIn there and suggest everybody should as well if you're open to that. But yeah, you're constantly putting almost the higher end jobs out there, right? The ones that are really titillating, right? This is a good job. And you put a little commentary to it. Most of it's pretty humorous, and I appreciate that. But yeah, man, you're always trying to just, put it out there into the ether. Hey, there's this available over here, or hey, Montana's looking for this, or we've got a district manager here. So I think that that is a really great role that you're playing in, disseminating this information to anyone that you're connected with. And I mean, let's just be real. The power sports slash motorcycle industry is a very tight niche community, right? Everybody kind of knows each other in one regard or another. And it's guys like you that are helping us keep a lot of these same people in this industry. So you mentioned that you started out as a dealership and you went to Fox, and then now you're with MIJ, and you also own Phoenix Handlebars, we should mention as well. But what kind of positions did you have in the dealership, not only when you first started, but up until, the day that you left to go to Fox? What kind of positions did you have?
So when I started, I worked at a place called Stoughton Cycle, and well, to date ourselves, we're going back to 1994. So a little bit of a pre-internet kind of era where maybe we were more competing against, I mean, traditional shops, but also mail order, like back of the magazine, like all the bitchin', like, mail order, like, Chaparral and Bob's
Yeah.
Cycle Supply. And we were just an accessory store. And we had like a huge boot wall and a huge like wall for like helmets. And that was always really cool because we became that destination place sort of around the Midwest that when the Supercross rolled to town, people like wanted to come see us. And what made that so cool was just like as a young kid who ended up getting his walking papers from Purdue University. And it's like, okay, well, maybe you're going to be going to the School of Hard Knocks instead. I took it really serious, and I got really lucky that the lady that owned that, her name was Wilma Stoughton, and she just taught, kind of like really taught me, like or I guess it's a merchandising and just, how we treated our customers, and we just always made it rad. That was the key, was just like have the raddest like kind of store, not that traditional dealership from back then. And so it certainly set the stage, and I was always a Fox fan. So you kind of take the coolness of what Fox Racing was, and all of a sudden now I'm working at Stoughton Cycle, and we cared about like what was cool, always had the coolest products, like as soon as something came out. And again, this is back then, that was a lot different. It's a lot of times just products were just utilitarian in a store, and we weren't that. So as I left and went to some other shops, I was stayed in the parts accessories was always kind of my thing. And of course, like I said, I really love the apparel side of things was cool, and hard parts. So no, I guess no real surprise of like where the brands that I ended up with later on were that love. And then I made a move to Bozeman, Montana, which was kind of like that was the thing that broke the seal from being a Midwest kid. And I was like, I'm gonna do this, loaded up and went to Bozeman. And that's really kind of was what broke the seal that eventually got me to Fox Racing. Because had I never left Indiana and went to Bozeman, I probably wouldn't have made that move to California. But when I went to Bozeman, I was the parts manager, parts, those parts and accessories. And another just eye-opening thing is now all of a sudden I went from the Midwest style of customer to being thrust into this thing where it's like snowmobiles are a way of life. And I'm
Yeah.
like, I didn't know shit about like snowmobiles. And so I quickly
Yeah,
had to like learn it. And yeah, it was rad, it really was. And so that was always the sides of the business that I worked on, just more like more parts accessories.
that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So let's switch gears and the theme of this podcast is talking about the state of the motorcycle power sports job industry. And certainly you're kind of sitting at the helm of a major place where a lot of people will post their jobs, and you're kind of a facilitator in a way to connect people to those jobs. So why don't we just kind of start out with what, in your opinion, is the overview of the current state of the job industry right now in power sports? What does it look like to you? And maybe tell us a little bit how it's evolved in recent years.
Well, it's kind of that thing that I get to remind dealers that it's like you don't have to go much farther than like hopping on any other news report or Good Morning America to see we're not unique in the regards that everybody's struggling to find good help, which is one of the things that I really try to like pound home with dealers. It's like don't please don't like think that it's like MIJ is not like a worthwhile, like source to be able to find somebody if you're not finding somebody quickly, or even if you're just struggling. However you're doing it, it's like, man, it's just tough. Everybody's in the same boat. And I have to break it up into the two because I look at, you have your aftermarket and OEM, and then there's dealership jobs. Like if you're KTM and you put a job up on MIJ, those are pretty exciting jobs and they get a fair amount of candidates because everybody longs to like want to work for an Alpine Star or Western Powersports or KTM. However, if you're a dealer and you're looking for the most valuable thing in the industry like right now, which is a service technician, and you're like looking and you're in Des Moines, Iowa, it's going to be a tough like road to haul. You're going to find them, but it's going to be tough to say like, hey man, I mean, there's not going to be like 30 like service techs like in Des Moines all like logging on during the 30 days that you posted a job and clamoring for that position. It's going to take some time, and that's why I'm always, it sounds like I'm trying to upsell people like when I tell them this, but I'm like, I'm just telling you, like you've got to be posting jobs and always be looking for candidates because they're out there, but it's just like, man, it just takes a long time. And as Alex always says, it's like you don't find your mate on match.com in just 30 days. It takes a while to like find that, to find that person. So,
That's a great point.
I don't know that I necessarily answered your question there, but the job
Well,
market, it's
from what I
interesting.
heard is from what I heard is that it's just as tough as any other industry out there. We're always looking for, good, skilled, trained people to fill these roles within the dealership and or, some of these OEMs or parts distributor companies, right? Yeah. I mean, it's always huge. In a podcast that we did a few weeks ago, I brought on Tim Yarborough, who's a national admissions person for MMI, and he was telling me that when he was looking at the open job position just for service technicians, there's something like over 700 open positions available that that dealers contact his school looking for people to move, to their area where these job postings are. And there's Alaska, there's Hawaii. I mean, some cool places, right? But I
I'd
mean,
say
just
that number's extremely low. I mean,
is
with
it okay?
I mean, if any dealer that calls, I'm pretty much like, I'm like, what are you looking for? Service technician? Like, yeah, how'd you know? And I'm like, this part's not rocket science. Everybody's looking for service techs, It's like,
Yeah. So let me ask you this then, outside of the service technician, which seems like every good dealer's needing more of them, or they need, better skilled, better trained guys to help fill these roles. What other types of other key job positions are constantly in demand right now, according to MIJ?
It's pretty even after that. I mean, I mean, I see everything from high-end $200,000 GM jobs like that are open quite a bit, which always surprises me. It's like, I mean, that's a lofty number, that, and a lot of dealers are looking for GMs, but whether it's Harley or a metric dealer, that one's sought after. But I mean, it's parts, it's sales, it's motor clothes people, it's I mean, about the only thing that sometimes some of them will keep off will be like some of their more entry-level positions, to which I'm always like trying to encourage a dealer. I'm like, why do you care? I mean, you don't know where eyeballs are going to come from to see a job. It's kind of like all geo-targeting. I'm like, I don't give a shit about geo-targeting because we're a small niche job board within a small niche industry. So if Jacob sees a job, like back in New Hampshire, and you're in AZ, but you've got a cousin that's like in New Hampshire, and they're like, oh shit, that he'd be great at like this, gig. And so you let them know, well, I don't care where those eyes came from. I'm glad you saw it and alerted somebody that may be like, oh, that's awesome. Thank you for hooking a like cousin up. And so I'm always telling dealers, I'm like, I don't care what level of job that it is. It's like, get it up here, whether it's, and even like, engineer jobs, those are something that we don't necessarily get a ton of engineers on our site, but it doesn't mean we don't get any. And SNS cycles, they're always putting up engineer positions. And like I said, we may not get a ton of hits, but but you just never know where a set of eyeballs may see something and even alert somebody, and then they go around us and apply direct to the source. And although while we like for things that come through us, it just helps, like, create value. So that way an employer goes, oh, that was money well spent. It's like, at least if we know we're doing our job. And like I said, I mean, should go without saying, I mean, should be able to say, we've been at this for 20 years. I mean, 2024 will be Alex's 20th anniversary, since starting MIJ, to which I'm always like, you gotta be doing something right if we've been able to be around for 20 years.
Yeah, certainly got the longevity there, and I consider it a staple. Now, just personally speaking, when we always would go to the open job market trying to fill some of these roles, we've got some other and this is just being open and transparent, right? We've got some other avenues out there that are maybe a little bit more broad, like say Indeed or some of these other job posting markets, whereas MIJ is super specific. How do you feel that the action that you get, the type of visits that you get, or prospective employers looking to fill these candidate roles, how do you feel when you kind of compete with these other larger job boards? Do you feel that they kind of suck up most of that stuff if people are just looking for a broad range of jobs, or do you feel
No,
like you get a lot of filled within the MIJ world?
it's I have to go back to kind of like say, like, we're the visibility of those jobs, and that somebody, like, we're, again, we're being a niche industry, and that we're all a little passionate about it, and that somebody may see it and pass that on. That's always like a key thing that I have to tell employers. I also tell employers, like, you can't put like your eggs in any one basket. We're not the savior, nor is Indeed. I'm like, the truth is what I tell a lot of dealers. I'm like, you have a now hiring sign in your front window, because the thing is that next great employee is most likely already a customer, right? It's a Jason Gerald who was walking in the Stoughton cycle and one day asked Wilma, like, when I was 18 years old, if she would hire me, and I mean, I'm gonna brag, she couldn't get a better, like, somebody, because who's gonna buy? Nobody's gonna be more passionate than I was. I was so excited to be in that role that, I mean, I gave it my heart and soul. And so when it comes to hiring, it's like, man, it's a tough market. Use MIJ. Absolutely. I mean, always got like tools to be able to try to help dealers out. Even a special 2024, 20th anniversary special that I've got going on for dealers that I hope that they take advantage of. They hit me up. And but whether it's ZipRecruiter, Monster, Indeed, Craigslist, Facebook, and the now hiring sign, put it all out there. The nice thing about Indeed is, like, it's free to, like, get your job up on their site. But when you've got the hundreds of thousands of jobs that they do, it quickly pushes down off the page. And so to get that visibility, you start having to add up. And real quickly, it's like all those little add-ons can make a job become a $200 and $300 job. You'll get candidates, because again, there's a vast majority of people like get on there checking. You also are going to get candidates that have Taco Bell experience, and I like worked at like the T-Mobile store, and what's like a Terex, never heard of her, kind of thing. And I'm like, yep, there you go. Now you might find some, like, really passionate person who falls in love with the power sports industry that way, and goddamn kudos that if that happens. It's like, that's the right answer. At least, like, you can bank on the people who are seeing our jobs. Know what a virago and a shadow are. Let those
You
kind of
gotta
date a little bit.
start somewhere, right? Got to start somewhere. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit more about some of the insights that you may have that is unique to be in the business development, at admin person for MIJ. Maybe could you share some of those insights into the performance of the job listings? And what I'm asking is that, it's 2023. Every year there always seems to be a little bit of turmoil, or great times in the job industry, right? There's good times, there's bad times. They all kind of are cyclical. They go up and down. 2008 was probably the last big time we had a big, economic crash. Are we seeing ups and downs in the job market, certain parts of the area, certain positions needing to be filled over others? Can you kind of give us a little bit of a trend into what you're seeing in the fluctuation between, year over year, good times and bad times?
Yeah, well, the nice thing about MIJ is that I kind of catch, like, a little bit of, I get to hear from everybody, So whether it's an OEM, I also get a lot of people who are, they'll knock on my door and be like, "Yeah, everything's going great." And like 5 minutes later, they're going, "Hey man, if you know someplace, I got to get out," that sort of situation. So to which I'm always like, "Hey man, we're the moto industry. That grass ain't always greener, like wherever you think that you're going." It's like, that's part of the charm and what it is that we do in this industry is we're a little loose, and that's a-okay. It's like I say, I'd rather us be that than be a corporate stodgy kind of place. I mean, I think without being super doom and gloom, we're going through that funky period like right now where inventory's high on a lot of things, whether it be units or gear, and unfortunately some people are, they're the headcounts are getting cut. So a lot of good people are finding themselves in the job market. And again, it's like I'm trying to I like to try to maybe keep some of my focus on dealers since it is dealership fix it, because I feel like I could talk about say the aftermarket side of the business, and that may not be as applicable for our, for the dealers listening, but it's all the industry related stuff. So I feel like at that point, so if I take it too far one way or the other, man, you just wrangle me back in, Jacob. But
No, go for it. This is all industry-based stuff. So yeah, we can talk about it from one side to the other for sure.
Brad, I like it. So yeah, I mean, like I said, a lot of good people have unfortunately been let go. It's like, and they're out there and they're looking, and like my part is while I'm not a recruiter, I'm trying to I try to help people and guide them kind of through a little bit of like what could we do, because I want to keep those people that love this industry that we love and are passionate about it still here, and keep them from going to automotive or going to a medical industry. And so many times I've had people like over the years do that and then come knocking back on my door and go, "Hey Jay, I miss it." And it's like, yeah, it's like you realize, man, the money wasn't the key part for us. It's like it's this camaraderie. The AIM Expo right after COVID, after the year or two that we didn't get a chance to do it, I hugged more people than I shook hands
Right.
because they're almost like a moto family, and that part was really cool. I wouldn't say that the trends like right now are necessarily any different than how I've like say it. I feel like it's been at least for the last like 2 or 3 years, which has just been, everybody's just always kind of looking for good help. Service tech thing probably scares me the most, because is that crew is the ones that are right now that are aging out, and now you've got a younger generation that has been told to, go be a doctor or a lawyer. It's like nobody's listening to Iron Maiden or Megadeth, in shop class anymore.
Yeah.
And we're not seeing that crowd. Not to mention, it's like now, motorcycles and ATVs all have so much electronics and Apple CarPlay. It's like the older guys don't know how to do that. And yeah, it's wild. And it makes me just wonder if this stuff can't get worked on, what happens? It's like if stuff sits in a service like department for a month, do the people who aren't as hardcore lose interest and be like, "Ah, screw it, I'll go play golf." And then we start to lose those people. And that
Yeah.
could, happen with just by a lack of service tech. So like with MMI doing what they can to try to like get more kids over there, I've looked for other schools that have vocational programs to try to connect with them. Because I'm always like, "Look, we don't need any money. All I need is for your students to know that all these great jobs, are out there waiting for them."
Yeah. That's great, man. You can definitely hear the passion that you talk about, and I fear the service technician as well, the lack thereof, and you're completely right. It's almost kind of built on a house of cards right now with a lot of these dealerships not backfilling or having some type of apprentice program for the younger generation of, future master certified technicians to help repair these vehicles, that they're pumping them out, in terms of sales on the front side of the house. But when they come back for their first service oil change, or they want, they got a problem, or they need a warranty fix or whatever, and they take it back to your service department, that great experience that they had in the sales department, it's now turned to a terrible experience because it's taking 2, 3 weeks to get their vehicle into the service department because just a lack of people that are qualified to work on that stuff, right? So you take out the service side of it from a dealership, which I'm sure some dealer principals would go, "Hey, yeah, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but it would be, right?" But you take out that service part of the dealership, the fixed ops side, and it kind of all crumbles, because where are people going to take their vehicle after the sale? Well, that lives in your service department. And so, yeah, I see it very much a problem, and it has been for a very long time, that we don't have enough people to replace these aging out, mechanics, right?
And it's not our
So,
just it's not just our industry, which is the one thing where it makes me misery loves company.
yep.
I've talked to I was at the Moto track, and the guy beside me was a aircraft mechanic, and he was like, "Yeah, we're going through all the same stuff." Friend of mine works like in big equipment with Caterpillar. He was like, "Yeah, we can't get service techs." And my son is a mechanic at a local Audi dealership, and obviously I hear their struggles. I mean, give you that story. It's like, I mean, he wasn't even a mechanic. They brought him in literally his first day as being an oil lube guy. They had him doing a steering rack, like, in a $100,000 Audi. And I was like, "What?
Yeah.
You know how to do that?" And he's like, "No." But there's the desperation. And we live in SoCal where, it's you would think it would be fairly easy to find, we're a highly populated area. And even then, there's this Orange County Audi dealership going, "Hey, we'll take anybody." And proud to say, man, the kid has crushed it, and he's learned, and he's developed a little bit of a love, and I don't know, try to say a passion, but man, he's doing really well. Which my takeaway there is that kid exists like for all the motorcycle shops too,
Yeah.
and so don't give up like on, it's like if somebody comes in with like an ounce of wherewithal and wants to learn, man, grab them. Get them in there and teach them. It's like, man, I've actually talked. There's a Westfield Power Sports back in Indiana. They've done that where they're saying like, look, we don't turn anybody away. We just got an apprentice program. And I know some other like I know there's a lot of other stores that are starting to adopt that, which is like smart. Hopefully, it continues to be a trend.
Yeah. Well, just kind of getting back on the trends, other than the we see some dealers making some cutbacks, so you're seeing it maybe an increase in open applicants to the MIJ and maybe some of these other job boards, right? Are you seeing any other trends? Are people going from maybe the dealership industry to, the vendor side? Are vendors coming to dealerships? Are they kind of crossing, to other dealerships across the country? Are people moving? What other types of trends
Moving.
can you give us some insights on?
Oh, cool. I like that, man. That's a good one. It's definitely, I mean, I think it's always that next level stepping stone that we all want to work in a dealership in order to get to the other side. And they're like, no, like what happens like on the other side of the curtain and, Wizard of Oz, kind of like what I got to see at Fox Racing. And it's like, I mean, if you're somebody who works at a dealership, of course, as a GM, you of course would love to go like next level and be a district sales manager for Kawasaki. So those jobs have been coming available, and a lot of people have been taking advantage of it. And but I've seen, like say, where because of the store, I'm sorry, the aftermarket and OEM places that have had to let people go, there's been a lot of people who've had to like go back to the dealership level. And like I say, not that that's a bad thing. I feel like sometimes that sounds like a negative connotation, but it's sometimes it's like, hey, that's you've taken that experience that you've had working on the other side, and now maybe like go, oh, I see the importance of bringing my passion to a dealership. Because let's face it, sometimes these dealerships, remember the person walking in your store is a passionate person, and when we have like somebody grumpy that doesn't act like they want to be there, it's like that bleeds over into like say the paying customer. It's like, man, that's why I'm always like, I don't want anybody being in there that doesn't dig what they do. It's like, let's make it fun for them. Well, there's another part of that that you asked, and then I
Just
brain-faded on.
some of the trends, vendor to dealer, or dealer to dealer, moving across the country at all. You know, are we seeing some migration patterns here with any of these applicants?
That was what I was going to say was I think with COVID, we saw a lot of people like wanting to move, especially from this state. A lot of people like want to get out of California because it's so expensive. And so you have that like where, people are looking to move, and heading to Tennessee and Texas and Idaho all became like really big hotspots, as a lot of people know. But at the same time, that's where I'm kind of the geo targeting. I'm like, man, people are constantly moving around. And so somebody maybe, maybe like a spouse is getting like, moved like into Connecticut, and you're going to be like joining along with her, and it's like, well, I need a job,
Yeah.
and so yeah, it's that's one of the things that I'm always telling like employers. I'm like, man, it's really easy to like look at a resume and go, oh, like they're from Arizona, it's like not interested, there's no relocation package. And I'm like, dude, take the call, find out, because maybe they're getting a relocation package from like say their spouse's like gig, and this cat just needs a job. And now you like pissed away a great opportunity of somebody because you thought that you were going to have to pay something else. So that's why I'm always like,
Yeah.
man, have the talk. And that goes both ways. I'm always like, the chatter's free, so just talk to people and see, because you just never know where like some synergy may align. And I'm so glad that I talked to you.
I like that. I like that. What type of advice would you give some of these dealer managers or, the HR people at the dealerships, who are looking to attract and retain some of these top talents that are now in the field because, maybe they were part of a downsizing from a bigger company. I mean, there's a lot of people out there. How should some of these dealerships capitalize on not only attracting, but getting them noticed on MIJ? Or, is it all pay? Is it a position? Is it lifestyle? What do you think? What do you think these dealerships are doing the best?
Check and check, right? It's write a job description for starters that I always tell people, like, would you like apply to that? It's like if it's a bunch of like bullet points that don't mean squat, Mike, who's, it's like, come on, like the longer the job description doesn't necessarily mean that it's like, all the more valuable. It's like put together a job description that like say is in layman's terms and let somebody like go, okay, I see what's in here, and then there's the part that, I mean, it seems so obvious, but it's like, why would I want to work for you? It's like, man, like sell people, like, I mean, if it's local and you're getting a local candidate, they may already know about maybe the, let's just say it was like, Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and you've got like, hey, come here, and we're like, close to Deals, Deals Gap. And it's like, and those kind of things. If a local person may already know that, but somebody who may be like looking for a change wants to think about all the other like awesome stuff that would have been a part of that, or what are the benefits of, working for the job? Another one that I always have a beef with is like when you copy and paste a job description into, whether it's Indeed or anybody. A lot of times it loses the formatting, and I'll find that dealers don't go through and clean that stuff up, which, as basic as that is, it's from an aesthetics, it makes it easier to read, and let's face it, it's like not everybody's sitting there going every line. They're kind of scanning. So I ask for people to try to clean that stuff up. I even try to get photos. We Alex will say it's like you don't go see a movie without seeing the trailer first. So we have the ability to drop photos into our job descriptions, which can look really cool and sexy. If like, I mean, if you got a nice service department, or the outside of the building looks cool, it's like let's rock that stuff in there. And it's like give somebody a visual. In a lot of states now, salary ranges are required, which is I love. I mean, I like the transparency of it, but really it's like I tell dealers all the time, I tell all employers, I'm like, again, would you apply to a job if you don't know if it's $40,000 a year or if it's $140,000 a year? You're going to attract the right candidates, more so of the right candidates. Like if it's 40 grand, you've obviously chased away like, maybe people who are overqualified. They're like, not interested. At the same time, if it's $140,000 a year, you're going to have some people who swing for the fences and try to get that job, but then there's probably going to be a fair amount of people who are like, "Oh, dude, that's right up my alley, and I'm in," and they're going to apply where they may not have before. So again, salary ranges, we added a on MIJs. We have a spot for it. I know Indeed and most places do, but and ours is optional. But when dealers put a salary range in there, they'll see better results, and then there's of course like when it comes to say service techs, because they're harder to find, is I'll tell dealers, I'm like, to add a, if you can afford to do a relocation package or a sign-on bonus. I mean, even if the sign-on bonus is for $500, it's like it'll grab somebody's attention. I mean, not everything needs to be like a $5,000 sign-on bonus. It's like, man, it's just something to be able to like kind of to grab their eyeball and get them to hopefully read your well formatted with, with photos included job description. And I think at that point you start to see some like better results.
I love that. I love that. Those are all great
Surprising how
points.
many people like drop $160 on a job description and be like, service tech needed. I was like, I mean, maybe it doesn't need to be too much longer than that, but again, then you get like stuff like this, and I'm like, dude, nobody's reading that, which means nobody's applying.
I love those points. I love those points. So yeah, slow down, write a good, speaking as a human, not copied from something else with a bunch of bullet points, job description. Include some pictures. I love that part too, because they kind of can see, some of the facility, right? They know what they're getting into right as they're looking at the job position. That certainly would, make me want to apply better. I like your point about rarely do you go see a movie without seeing the trailer first, right? That's kind of the attraction to go, okay, let me take the next step and, apply to this job. And then, yeah, transparency on the pay for let me ask you this on that part for the states that these dealers are in that don't require? Are they still using that box more often than not to post, you know, what the job pays?
I've started to notice that, yeah, it's happening more. I mean, I you know, on our side, we just broke out the box because, you know, you could put it like in the job description, but like, I think like creating a salary range text box, like when creating the job, I think some people are like, oh yeah, I should put that in there. And I'm sure that they are, because again, it's really, for us, it's like, it's way more fun to put up a job on social media, like when I do, and I can kind of call that out, because on my side, it's like, you know, you're looking for candidates. On my side, I'm just, you know, I'm looking for those candidates for you, but I'm also looking whatever attracts more attention to our small job board and stuff like salary ranges. I mean, man, even if it's like putting in like, you know, hey, this is $12 to $14 an hour. It's like, cool, man, that's perfect. Now all of a sudden, now some like, you know, like kid right out of high school or something might be like, that's right up my alley. You know, at least now I know what I'm up against. And it's like, this is, you know, maybe they're intimidated and not going to apply to a job where it was 60 or 70K a year. But when they see that it's like, this is a little more entry level, they're going to maybe feel better. Now you've attracted the right candidate.
I love that. Yeah. Are there any other things that you know, let's say I'm a dealer and I go to MIJ and I've got my nicely written job post. I had some pictures. I had some you know, payment details, right? Some pay terms. What else can I do? You know, if I'm a proactive dealership operator, should I share it on LinkedIn, this job post? Should I include it in my company newsletter? What are some other tips that I can help,
Oh
you
yeah.
know, my business attract some of these, you know, top people talent that I want in my dealership to help run things. You know, I need a service tech, I need a finance manager, I need a sales manager, I need salespeople. What else can I do beyond just posting it in MI?
If you're a motorcycle and power sports dealer, you already know the biggest marketplace websites are clunky, slow, and riddled with ads. Even if you pay big bucks to list your inventory, your competitors can pay even more to outrank you. That's why we created MotoHunt. Our site is famously streamlined and quick, with no extra nonsense to confuse buyers or dealers. That's why we rank so high in search results without having to spend millions in advertising. Why pay three times as much? At MotoHunt, one low price covers everything a dealer needs to get their inventory listed and collecting leads fast, with no multi-level pricing tiers and no way for your competition to out-premium you. No matter how many listings or leads you generate, your subscription price is the same. Click the link to find out how MotoHunt can help you start generating more leads today.
Well, you know, a lot of times when we're trying to get a hold of a dealer, it's always the hard part. It's like, well, who's the one running, posting the jobs within your dealership? Do you have a dedicated HR person, which a lot of times people don't? Is there an office manager? Is the GM doing it? Is the owner? Or is each department head kind of like managing? Which is always the funny thing for us. It's like, you know, you take a shop and you go to like do a search and you see that they have nine accounts because the service person, like, you know, 6 years ago created one, then the new service person like jumps on and creates a whole new account, sales, and so trying to collect all that stuff and get it in one little, I mean, I end up doing a lot of like house cleaning on the back end. But if there was somebody who within there, you know, social media manager, it's like, I mean, Iron Pony has been fantastic, but I create Instagram story listings. And so I'm always tagging the dealer because in hopes that they'll reshare it. It's good marketing for us to obviously get MIJ's name better out there. But the truth is, I mean, these dealers probably don't have really deep social media followings. It's going to be local people, which means it's a local person who's going to see now, oh, Iron Pony's hiring. You know, they need a tire changer. It's like, I can change tires. So even though it was MIJ that put up this stuff up, you know, you've reshared out that content. And I do that for almost every dealer that puts up a job on there just for that reason, and going through and finding their Instagram and hoping that they share our job out, you know, our their job onto their social media. And yeah, just again, eyeballs, 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 you know, and it's a networking game. We all know that.
Yeah, I
You
love
get,
that.
even if you're not the one who sees it, somebody else will, hopefully will, which is one thing that I make sure I always kind of put in there. It's like, hey, even if this isn't for you, would you mind, you know, it's like, think of your buddy who's like sitting on the couch watching Ellen, who could use a job like right now, you know, let them know.
I love
And
that.
sometimes you just have to remind people like, oh shit, you're right. I need to like, you know, let Jacob know.
Yeah, definitely leveraging your social media is huge for sure. So let's kind of switch gears as we round out our last couple questions here. And again, appreciate you coming on. Wealth of advice. This is all about hiring and using these platforms to fill the roles needed in the dealership and other, power sports industry sectors, vendors, manufacturers, OEMs. But let's talk a little bit more from the applicant's point of view, because, maybe someone's listening to this, they're recently in the open job market. Let's talk a little bit more about how they should present themselves when they do apply on one of these job postings on MIJ or any of these other job boards. They see something locally, or like you said, they're shared on social media, they see that. What types of things should they be including? How should they be presenting themselves? Or what type of maybe education or training should they be talking to these prospective future employers about when they want to go apply and talk to these guys?
Well, I have a saying that says it's not what you know, it's not who you know, it's who knows you. And I don't know who came up with it. Bryce Maxwell, who works over at motosport.com, gave me that. And because we were trying to, like, at the time he was looking for something like whatever was going to be new. And it can be one of those things where Jacob Berry knows somebody over at Yamaha, and that's all fine and dandy, but that doesn't necessarily get like your hat thrown in the ring, unless somebody over there knows you and says, you know what? This guy has crushed it, like, on marketing. He does a killer job. That's the kind of person we need to get on our team. We need to snag him. So it's not what you know, it's not who you know, it's who knows you, which means that I'm always telling people, I'm like, you have to be in self-marketing. You have to be like out there making sure that somebody knows that you're genuine and what your knowledge is, like, in regards to something, where your passion comes from. I mean, again, I don't know how else, I don't want to send this too sideways, but I mean, here's a story for you. Story time with Jay.
Go for it.
Oh, a guy hit me up. I love this one. So a guy hits me up in around COVID time. He's like, hey Jay, finds me on LinkedIn, doesn't know me, and asks, how do I get in the motorcycle industry? So I give him some pages out of my playbook, and he's in Pennsylvania and he works in farm implement. So nothing moto, but he's obviously used to selling like $100,000, farm equipment and then some. And he applied to a job from Helmet House. So I happen to know the HR lady over there, and I'm always really careful about how I put my name against somebody because my reputation's on the line. So if you suck as an interview, they're gonna go, well, that'd be the last time I listen to Jay. It's like, thanks for the bad lead, you kook. And but I email Susan and I tell her, it's like, hey, this guy, his resume is not going to read moto, but he's solid. He's got a really passionate outlook. He wants to work in our little industry, and he comes from farm implement. He's worth a chat. At least get this cat like on the phone. And they get his resume moved to the top of the heap. So he interviews. They like him. He goes, I didn't get the job. He says, but I'm not discouraged. She goes, Jay, this was awesome. He goes, it makes me like even realize more that I really want to work in the industry. And he even told me, he says, they gave it to the better guy. He says, the other guy was plug and play. It was an outside sales rep job. And I was like, oh man, I'm so sorry, but cool. Just keep on looking, pal. So a handful of months later, I mean, it's like 6+ months later, a job comes available at Helmet House. And they said, hey, we should get that cat back like on the phone that we interviewed before. And guess what? He got the job. He called me. He's like, Jay, I got hired. I said, dude, you just validated what I'm always saying. It's like, you didn't even know that that job existed. They thought of you because you interviewed well from the previous time. And so it's not what you know, it's not who you know, it's who knows you. And even like the starting that, had I not known him, which I didn't, I wouldn't have vouched for him in that initial interview with Helmet House to begin with. So he did a good job of marketing himself. And I'm happy to say he's still with them. And I was bummed we didn't get a chance to meet at AIM because I wanted to like shake his hand or hug the cat and say, good job, man. Thanks for giving me a good story to be able to tell. So, and that's where I'm always telling, like, anybody who's trying to get a job, it's like, man, you got to know who the players are. Like, if you're standing next to Bob Weber at an event and you're a big helmet guy, and you just squandered an opportunity because you didn't realize you were sitting next to the co-owner of 6D Helmets, to which that's where I tell people, I'm like, look at industry related, magazines and websites. Like, you know, Dealer News is a big one for me because I'm really close with Robin Hartfield, who's the editor of Dealer News. And he does a good job of putting, you know, the players like in there because that's what it's all about. But it's like, if you're familiar with those names, you know, it kind of gives you a leg up if you're at an event.
Love that. I love what Robin's doing over there at Dealer News. He puts out a good publication for sure. So I appreciate you sharing that success story of the gentleman over there at Helmet House. And basically, if I'm hearing you correctly, it's basically, you know, do your best, show up, have that passion, have that enthusiasm, because that's what works best in this industry. And don't give up because there's a lot of opportunity out there, maybe not with that employer, but because he showed such a great, you know, interview and you knew him and they knew him. He eventually got the job that that got him landed. So that's awesome, man. Tell us a little bit more about some of the regional or geographical areas of the country. Are you seeing any applicants, you know, increase in the West Coast and the East and the North and the South? We're kind of going into fall time now. You know, it's the middle of September right now. We got October right around the corner. Some of the northern states are probably going to be maybe scaling down some of their operations because snow's hitting here in the next month or two. Where do you see some of the parts of the country seeing the most influx of not only job openings, but available applicants?
It's kind of that thing that every year, you know, we're so cyclical. It's like, you know, snow comes in, and if you're a snowmobile heavy kind of, you know, dealer, obviously you're pulling out, you know, the Simmons Flexi skis and pulling out the long tracks and getting ready because here comes like, you know, the real money making part of your year. And then there's other places where it's like, you know, they're kind of rolling up the carpet and saying, well, we'll see you in spring. On my side, that's where I'm always trying to still encourage dealers to keep looking for candidates even during those, you know, especially as we roll into like Christmas time. I don't think like we have the craziness like we used to when it comes to the holiday season and dealerships, just because now everything, you know, because online, unfortunately, can, you know, take away some of those like brick and mortar sales. But that's where I'm like, figure out how to like make it fun again for people to like want to like come through those doors. And in that regards, I'm always telling dealers, like, you know, to still be looking for hiring people. And, you know, and unfortunately that mentality is like, oh, we're going in their slow season, so we're not going to be hiring. And I'm like, but now there's always a good time to be collecting resumes, right? Always, 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 always. So, and, yeah, I can't say that I see any influx of anything that would be unique to MIJ that like dealers wouldn't kind of maybe be already aware of. You know, now regionally, it's like I'm seeing more stuff happening. Like, you know, Georgia's gotten to be a little bit of like the motocross industry east, you know, with like obviously Triumph and Honda and Yamaha have like moved operations like over there. So Pirelli and Maxxis is there. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's happening over in Georgia. And it's crazy because, you know, there's people who may live in Georgia and don't realize that these killer opportunities exist for them because they didn't realize that Yamaha's no longer in Cypress. It's like, you know, it's over here now in Marietta. It's like, oh shoot, that's awesome. You know, Texas has got a lot of stuff between Segway, Hisun, Quinn Helmets. I mean, there's some other companies, Vulcan. I mean, there's a lot of like stuff that's popping up. Mark Berg and his CPD with Ryuhu and I mean, everywhere I look, I'm always like saying, hey, look, there's an opportunity. Kenda Tires in Ohio. You know, and those are looking for like stuff outside the dealer stuff, but those are like places where I go, well, that gives somebody hopefully an excitement to go through the dealer channel in order to like work for Dave Komorowski over at Kenda. You know, start off like at Iron Pony and go to the next thing.
All great companies you mentioned there, and I'm sure that they need some help. And I'm glad that there's organizations like MIJ out there to help them fill these roles. So, as we kind of close out here, the last question, I always like to look forward into the future a little bit, if we could. So, you obviously been at this for a while. You're very good at it. MIJ is a staple within our industry, you know, because you play a unique role in a very niche industry. How do you kind of see this evolving in the future, right? Let's look down the road a year. Let's go down the road 5 years. Let's go down the road 10 years. How do you see this whole industry in terms of placing qualified candidates with dealers or other, you know, power sports industry related fields? How do you see all this evolving to make it better, to make it just an overall better place to work, to live, to support your family, and ultimately have fun in an industry that we all seemingly enjoy. How do you see that evolving?
We didn't, we don't need to cover off on Phoenix Handlebars, but I mean, as you've told, I own Phoenix Handlebars, so I make handlebars for dirt bikes. I put a bunch of money into that, life-saving stuff to create something that I was passionate about, right? And with my wife, we're sitting like right there. I always tell her it's like, I'm like the starving artist of the family. But the thing was is all my eggs are in the basket of this industry because I do believe in it. And I say when I started Phoenix Handlebars, it was like I still see a future. Like I'm not worried that we're gonna lose, that we're gonna go away overnight. I just don't believe that that's the case now. And then with what I do with MIJ is to me, they're both so synonymous. Like, it's like, I mean, I love working for MIJ, even though I own Phoenix Handlebars. I love what I do with them because of the passion of trying to make sure I keep good people in this industry. Because as I'm always saying, it's like nobody needs a handlebar and grip if you're not riding dirt bikes anymore. If you're golfing on the weekend and no longer riding, doesn't matter how good my product is. So it behooves me to make sure that everything that we do with MIJ keeps this industry, plugging along, single cylinder at a time, and not grenading. So, and yeah, like, well, I mean, in my opinion, I feel like, I've always heard everybody talking about grow, 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 more butts on the seats and all that, which, hey, man, we got to keep plugging away with that. That part's awesome. I just always feel like we're only going to get so big, and that's totally fine by me. It's like, I mean, I like that we're a cool core audience, and it's like if we can continue to like introduce like, that next generation and keep them like in here, that's cool. What I'd like to see happen is I'd like to see us like make sure that like we have more Phoenix Handlebars out there that are like owned by, family or, like a Rocky Mountain ATV where it's, employee owned, and just I don't want to see VC money or any of these places that are coming in and what I feel like is still in a, the bitching culture from an industry that we love. It's like, I mean, it's like, look at, you have two professional guys here, you like rocking, Brixton hat and a t-shirt, and you don't even know what I've got on below my shirt. It's like, it's moto industry. It's supposed to be like rad, it's
Yeah.
supposed to be. So I think like, if I could, I know we're a business. I know we've got to all make money, but the thing is, it's like, let's just, if we can do our part to try to keep it like, I mean, this sounds so cliche, but keep it fun and core. But it's just like, dude, truth is, it's like, yeah, it's like nobody needs this. I mean, we don't necessarily need it, but like some of us absolutely need it because that's like what keeps us sane. It's like, I can't imagine a world without a throttle, And so that's always my hope is just that we see dealers start to harken back to a time like where they come back to Stoughton Cycle, where people on a Friday night wanted to come in and just hang out and watch Terra Firma videos like on the other side of the counter and bullshit about racing or riding. And I think some places are definitely finding that coolness again. They're out there. There's a lot of them that are out there. It's like saying that's that I think like some of the big stuff is going to get weeded out, and we're going to end up with like say those cool core companies and hopefully with the right people, then you realize, yeah, we can make a living. Like I'm not panhandling. I've lived an amazing life, and I've never been wealthy doing what I do. But if I get hit by, if I get creamed by a semi truck tomorrow, just know that I've lived a pretty amazing life. So, and I hope that what I do with MIJ helps maybe make somebody else be able to like also like appreciate this like rad life that, some of us live. So.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. And it's funny that you brought up, going on a Friday night to bullshit with the guy at the motorcycle shop. For me, it was always a Wes Miller Wevo 7 ATV racing, freestyle video up on the TV as we're talking about it, in the motorcycle shop. So I love that. But just to clarify on, the evolution question there, is this maybe something that you see evolution wise for maybe like a further digitization where we're seeing maybe less less sales guys and we're seeing more digital reps, right? Web lead handlers, inbound phone call handlers, we're seeing delivery specialists. A lot of the market is going to an e-commerce model possibly, right? Depending on what your business model is at your dealership or your industry, do you see a lot of almost like specialized skilled people needing for the online customer, because that's where you know, the customer trends are taking us in this industry? Do you see any of that type of trend moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think inevitably the digital is going to it's going to like take, it's going to find its way in there. I mean, take like what Joaquin Aranda's doing with and his team are doing over there at Pure Moto. I mean, he's explained it to me about 15 times, and it's going to take 16 or 17 more before it soaks in. It's over my head. I'm 49, and I think sometimes just a little bit too old school organic that I don't follow a lot of that. But I also look at how many employers are looking for outside sales reps. One of the things that I'm trying to do, like on MIJ, is maybe be able to collect all these great jobs of outside sales reps all on one page, so that because they're all independent, a lot of these places aren't able to make the and don't worry, I'm going to tie this all in, but that they're not able to make the money to be a company rep. Like back in the day, like a Fox rep would only carried Fox, but prior to that, they were independent. They were having to do Fox and be a Sullivan Brothers rep as well, because they needed to be able to make that money. And then the money got good enough that they could do their own. Well, now I think we're finding that it's getting a little bit slower and more crowded, and to be able to collect all those guys. The other part about that I think that's also that is so rad is that we're realizing that people still want that human interaction,
Yeah.
and they still want a rep to come in. I mean, I've got a little small shop that just opened up like here in this last year, just down the road from me. And I heard him complaining about one of their distributor reps, while another one was in there, and that person's getting all the business. The relationships still matter, So yeah, I think the digital stuff is going to inevitably like get a grasp on us. But I think one of the cool parts is we still that human interaction's pretty awesome. So I think that there's a lot of opportunities there for, I think if like, some of these like people who are looking to like break out and become outside sales reps, it's going to be like, it may have to be a younger person and like, maybe be willing to, do the windshield time and eat like more, Big Macs and Whoppers on the road, but it's out there for you,
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. There's always going to be a place for the brick and mortar or the sales rep that visits the stores and creating those relationships. It's a human business for sure. But I just didn't know if there was an increase in, people wanting to hire for software engineers or website builders, digital marketers, social media managers, right? Where it's this specialized labor force to support the industry, but they're doing all of their work seemingly online to attract the customer to that brick and mortar, So, but
I don't see a lot of it getting posted. I mean, I'm not saying that's not out there. I think, I mean, I'm sure like say your RevZillas and your Rocky Mountain ATVs have got some pretty, some
yeah.
pretty people like over there that need to know that stuff. And again, it's like Joaquin and this Pure Moto group are, they're way too smart for their own damn good, But and I've listened to like on your podcast, like some of the stuff that you guys talk with like lead generation and dealers. And that's one of those where it's like, I mean, my thing's always like, I'm not saying there's not smart people in there, but I just wonder how many of them are a lot like me. And it's just like, you're throwing fantastic advice at me, but I don't know how to implement that.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part. It's like, okay, well, what do I do with that? It's like, and again, if I'm doing like 67 different things, like I'm generally doing, it's like, okay, those are all great ideas. What I don't need is more advice, because I need somebody to help me implement it and make this shit happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Time to cruise the open positions. Well, you mentioned Joaquin over at Pure Moto. We got to check out what he's doing over there. So shout out to him, and maybe we'll see some future developments from him. So glad that you brought up Phoenix Handlebars. Tell us a little bit about that before we end our segment here. It's a handlebar manufacturing company that you own.
Yeah, so I started it back in 2017. It was to do, I'm a motocrosser at heart or dirt biker, and I wanted to do something. I've always wanted to do my own brand. And so Phoenix is my son's name, and that's where the Phoenix part came from. And I'm just trying to create a brand that, like, one had a little differentiation in the product mix than being different than the other brands that are already out there. So I simplified the bar bends down, so there's not as many bend options to make it easier for people to figure out, well, what bend do I need? What do I need to like have a good time like riding? I'm a dual sport guy, and it's like, guide me through. Like, I don't feel like that part has been done, and so I wanted to do that. And then there was the marketing aspect of the hero of our story is not a handlebar, right? You know, even if like I shave 3 seconds off, off your, or, 3 seconds off your lap time, I'm still not the hero. To me, the hero of our story will always be the person who is working 50-hour work week and on Wednesday night is out in their garage, like cleaning air filters, because nobody likes enjoys doing that, so that they can go ride on Saturday with their buddies. Like, that person loves this sport, and that's what, and that to me is always going to be the hero. Is like, you need to like make sure that, you make them like be special. So like when we package, when I'm, how I package product, everything is trying to like just deliver an awesome experience to somebody. So that way, when they crack that box open, their utilitarian product of a set of handlebars isn't just like, oh, cool, my handlebar showed up. It's like, you open it, you're excited. You cannot wait to get them on your bike. And now you cannot wait to like go moto on Saturday. It's like, to me, that's the right answer. And that was, kind of the whole impetus of creating, Phoenix Handlebars, was to make sure that I have people have fun riding their motorcycles and not going kayaking or going to see the Barbie movie on Sunday night instead. So
that's awesome, man. Are you direct to consumer? Are you a vendor inside dealerships selling handlebars and dealers? How do the consumers get them?
For the most part, it's B2C. Okay. Of course, like I say, I mean, I'm a dealer, I'm a dealer guy at heart. So ideally it's like, I want to be involved with dealers. I haven't pressed hard. I think that like my product mix, if you guys get on the website and you'll see, I only have, it's like four bends. It's almost like what I've done is create a size run of handlebars, because all the bars are the same width. They all 800 millimeters wide. They all have a 55 millimeter sweep. And then there's four height options of 70 and 80 and 90 and 100. So from a dealer standpoint, to me, it's like that's nice. Like I could put those on the wall and it's easy for a customer to kind of wrap their mind around. Then I've got a really cool little quiz that's on our website. So what I did is I create some POP that if a customer's standing there at the wall, they could QR code, go into the quiz. The quiz takes about 15 to 20 seconds to be like, well, what kind of rider am I? And then we shoot out and tell them, it's like, hey, you're a, we suggest for your riding style and your height, and you're a 90 millimeter. Now, if Bucko is not like coming out from behind the counter, still like over there looking at TikTok, now that customer made that hard decision, made the hard decision of what bars, at the wall. And I'm hoping that like, say we can get more dealers on board and be able to help them out in that regard. I mean, like I said, it's still, you can't buy a helmet a lot of times by yourself. You need that guidance, and a lot of times handlebars also need that guidance. But so I'm trying to find ways to be able to like do it to make it easy so dealers can now, because it's, weirdly enough, I mean, it's already almost like, we're going to be starting our sixth year, a ton of people still don't know that we exist. So to put them in a dealer, I feel like if I don't have the right dealer where somebody's excited to come over there and tell somebody about them, I'm up against Coke and Pepsi, and people are going to gravitate towards the brands that are well known.
Yeah.
But time goes on and we build their trust, I mean, it'll get more popular. And at that point I'll be stoked to like have, and by hopefully at that point I'll have even more like, better POP that even helps that experience even greater for somebody out there. Cause that's the thing, man. I want people walking through the door, of your dealership. And I hate the like, well, we can order it. Yeah. So can I. I can have it delivered right to my door. I don't want to come back. So I want people to like be able to like walk in there and have a good experience and walk away and be like, rad.
I love that, man. Yeah. I looked at your website earlier, phoenixhandlebars.com. It's a great looking website, got great looking products. So definitely my hat's off to you, man. 6 years you've been producing these. So yeah, if any of our dealers listening to this, then go check it out. Contact Jason directly. We'll have some links in the show notes, as well as maybe your LinkedIn profile, or we'll get that in there so we can have them contact you directly. But
open book here, man. Open book. You can give my
open book.
Yeah, cool. I mean, and that's I give my cell phone out all the time, like on LinkedIn. Like, I mean, whether it's Phoenix Handlebars or whether it's MIJ, I'm just like, hey, like I'm here to help. It's like, I mean, my big problem is that sometimes it's like I try to help too much, and you got to like go, what's your time worth? But the thing is somebody took their time with me, and look at where I'm at. So.
And likewise, man, I feel the same exact way. A lot of people took the time to show me a lot of the ropes and guide me through this complicated industry that we share, that we're in, power sports. And if we can give that back in any way, that's kind of what we're doing here on this podcast. So as we close out, man, I just want to say thank you again. You're certainly a wealth of knowledge. You know, we've got a lot of history here with Jason at the dealerships, with Fox, and now with Phoenix Handlebars, your own company, and of course, motorcycle industry jobs. He's on LinkedIn. He posts a lot of great stuff there. I suggest you guys follow him. A lot of great commentary. It's often humorous while he's posting, you know, seriously about an open job. He usually bubbles up the good stuff. You know, KTM posted this, Helmet House posted this. And so, a lot of great information that you're putting out there, in the professional business world of LinkedIn, you know, on that social media site, as well as other ones. But you can check him out in motorcycleindustryjobs.com, phoenixhandlebars.com. And Jason, just want to say thank you for everything, for the time that we've got. Everybody listening to this, make sure you subscribe. Make sure that you follow. We've got new content coming out all the time, talking to guests just like Jason from all over the industry, different positions, different types of ways that dealers can interact with different vendors, companies, or in this case, a job posting board that is a staple in our industry. So just want to say thank you again, man. Appreciate you coming on. Any last words before we go?
My last words always go long, so we better stop. So I appreciate you having me, man. This was awesome.
Well, I'll say one last word for you there. I really like your quote, and I wrote it down. It's not what you know, it's not who you know, it's who knows you. So that's what we're talking about in this podcast here. So definitely get yourself out there and get that self-promotion so that you could land that next big gig, you could get that pay raise, you could get that dream job that you love. So Jason, thanks again, man. We appreciate you, and everybody, we'll see you next time.
Awesome. Thanks.
For a power sports dealer, there are a lot of moving parts that have a direct impact on your income. That's why Moto Hunt Premium was developed. Designed specifically for dealers, Moto Hunt Premium allows you to quickly and easily manage your inventory. With streamlined pricing data from competitive dealership listings, JD Power Pricing Guide, and National Power Sport Auction wholesale prices, Moto Hunt Premium also automatically identifies potential issues with your online listings to help you move your aging inventory and maximize your gross profits. Contact us today to take a test ride of the all-new Moto Hunt Premium and see how we can help your business grow and sell more inventory.